Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode of Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. If you would like to learn how to support this podcast, visit www.patreon.com/writingexcuses.
You're invited to the Writing Excuses Cruise, an annual event for writers who want dedicated time to focus on honing their craft, connecting with their peers, and getting away from the grind of daily life. Join the full cast of Writing Excuses as we sail from Los Angeles aboard the Navigator of the Seas from September 19th through the 27th of 2024, with stops in Ensenada, Cabo San Lucas, and Mazatlan. The cruise offers seminars, exercises, and group sessions, an ideal blend of relaxation, learning, and writing, all while sailing the Mexican Riviera. For tickets and more information, visit writingexcuses.com/retreats.
Season 19, Episode 30. This is Writing Excuses.
A close reading on character, agency versus choices.
15 minutes long because you're in a hurry.
And we're not that smart.
I'm Mary Robinette.
I'm Dong Wan.
I'm Aaron.
I'm Howard.
You had a lot of agency in that.
I made some choices.
And
I chose to pause.
Pause. On purpose.
But speaking of, what do we mean by agency and choices? Let's probably start by defining those terms a little bit.
So in my mind, agency is the ability to take action, and choices are more about the interior life of the character. I will admit that some of my understanding of this comes from my talking cat, who does not actually have an enormous amount of agency. My dog doesn't also does not have an enormous amount of agency. I decide when they're going to eat and all of that. My cat, when she goes up to her button board, will press the buttons and it's like, I'm concerned about the fate of the world. And my dog goes up to the button board and is like, here, 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 friend. So my cat has this interior life. My dog really does not. My cat makes choices. My dog just kind of reacts to things. And when I think about characters, I think about characters that I used to think that I needed to pick the character that had the agency, the one that could make the most change in their life. But I realized that from reading things like Matthew Salicy's Craft in the Real World, that that was causing me to remove characters who were incarcerated or otherwise in oppressed communities because they didn't have a lot of agency. But the characters that are interesting are the ones that have rich interior lives, the ones who can make choices even as they are constrained by a lack of agency.
Yeah, there's a great essay that I read about this called We Are the Mountain by Vita Cruz. And it talks about how so many fantasy stories will be about somebody like leaving the small town to go like off in adventuring. But what about the people, you know, when their town is destroyed by a dragon? But what about the people who are still living in the town destroyed by a dragon, who are just having to get by? And what those people are also living very interesting lives, but and it's because they have to make small choices about how they'll react, how they'll respond, how they'll think about their lives in the midst of all this dragon destruction. And I think that that relates really well to the story that we're talking about today, Your Eyes, My Beacon, which actually starts with someone on an adventure that doesn't quite go sort of the way that they planned.
Yeah, I love this framework because both characters in this story are deeply constrained. One is constrained both to her role as the lighthouse keeper and being the light in the lighthouse herself. And there's no one else who can take that role. She's the only person who can do this, and is also trapped in a fascistic state, which is explicitly hunting down and eliminating people like her, right? She's so constrained, she's so trapped, and needs a certain medication also to survive, right? And still, we get this rich character who's capable of making choices, who has interior wants and needs and desires. And on the other side, we have this character who is this adventurer character who comes in, is wounded, is stuck here for other reasons. And so watching these two people interact and make their choices, even though, you know, kind of going back to last week's episode, there's so many barriers in their way. There's so many different things that are preventing them from accomplishing their goals that suddenly they're even what their goals are comes into question. What are they trying to accomplish? Becomes very fuzzy in the middle of the story in a way that I really enjoy, because there's so many constraints on them that it's hard for them to figure out what it is that they want, which then leads to all the interesting choices made in the back half of the story, which are kind of heartbreaking in various ways.
Absent any sort of support mechanism, the lighthouse keeper lives alone. Absent any support, the lighthouse keeper doesn't really have much of a choice as to whether or not the light stays on. They're doing everything they can, but when they reach the limits of their ability, there isn't anyone to help them. So they don't have a choice when the light goes out. That light going out removes agency from the entire crew of the ship. Suddenly, the only choices they have are figure out how to swim out of a, you know, shattered on the rocks ship. And many of them, their agency ends forever because they no longer have any choices, because dead.
You know, sorry. That is sad, but also for some reason, the way you say it.
If you say it correctly, it's a joke.
The way you said it tickled me. But what I was thinking about also in both of what you're saying is, this story is not at all about how to stop the hunting of lighthouse keepers, about what the High Court is doing. The characters don't even think about it. Like, their agency is so far removed, sort of the way that when, you know, the light is removed, you're just trying to swim to shore. They're not trying to change the system or take down the man. They're really just trying to make connection. Like, the biggest choice is, do I let another person in to my flawed self or my flawed life? Not do I change the way that my life is flawed, which I think is so poignant and beautiful.
Well, I love you bringing up the essay and going back to this idea of leaving the village versus staying in the village, right? In a traditional epic fantasy, it falls into what I think of as a restoration fantasy, which is about fixing the world and restoring it to its prior state, which kind of traps fantasy sometimes in a backward-looking mode. So when you give characters full agency in the world, when they can change the fate of the whole world, then there's so much responsibility that goes on in that character that weirdly you remove choice from them. Because if you have infinite power, how could you not try and fix things, right? Versus it can sometimes be so much more interesting to put people in extreme constraint to take away their agency. And then we get to see, what does this character do in this circumstance, right? And, you know, we see that in this story where they're not trying to fix the world. They're trying to save each other. And it becomes so much more poignant and powerful. And we see this across all three stories. In The Cook, no one's trying to stop this war. It's, how do I survive till the next meal? How do I take care of this person who needs to be fed? you know, in Your Perfect Broken Thing, it's how do I survive this race? No one, again, is trying to undo the systems that they're trapped in. They're trying to survive those systems. And I think that's why these make such wonderful character studies, because it's what do people do under duress, not what do people do when they have infinite power.
One of the other things that I want to point out is that you can demonstrate those even when you're not in the character's head.
Yes.
And that's also something that I love about this story. There's a moment shortly after our protagonist wakes up when she's asking, you know, about the light. The light went out. And so we're in first person and we're viewing the other character, and you can see the choice that is made. No, I say, the light, it went out. The other woman looks askance at the cup in her hand. I was sick. The flame went out. She doesn't look at me as she says it, ashamed-like, and why not? So this is a fascinating moment because our main character, our viewpoint character, misinterprets what is happening there. The character is choosing to lie about why the flame went out. And our character believes that she is looking askance, she's hesitating, she's coming up with excuses just because of shame. And it's more than that. But you're able to see that because of these small choices that character is making, even though our POV character is misinterpreting them.
I'd like to draw a parallel between the opening of this story and some of the spatial world building in Arkady Martin's A Memory Called Empire, the idea of constriction and then expansion. Mm-hmm. At the end of the first section of this story, these three lines: I have only two coherent thoughts in the frigid darkness. Do not get hit by the ship. Where did the light go? In that moment, she really only has one choice. Swim in a direction that gets me hit by the ship, or swim in a direction that doesn't get me hit by the ship. And because there's no light, I don't even know which choice I'm making. It is very desperate. It is, arguably, it is the most desperate possible narrowing of a person's choices. Because you get to make a choice, but you don't even know what it will do. When we get to the end of the story, where we are answering her question, finally, where did the light go? She makes a choice to do something about the light. And it's a whole series of choices. There's a myriad options that she has along this path in answer to the question, and to help make sure that nobody else has to make the choice about swimming or not swimming out from under the ship.
And with that, we are going to make the choice to take a break, and then we will be right back.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. so you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I have a new short story out in Uncanny Magazine. It's called Marginalia, and it gets its name and setting from the doodles in medieval manuscripts. Have you seen the ones with knights fighting giant snails? So I thought, what if the reason those were in so many manuscripts was that there were actually giant snails and knights had to defend against them, and we don't know about them today because they were just hunted to extinction? I'd love it if you'd hop over to Uncanny and read it. That's Marginalia by me, Mary Robinette Kowal.
Yeah, picking up with what Howard was talking about before the break, taking this idea of compression and expansion into this story and how it applies to agency and choice is also, I think, really fascinating, because the pivotal moment in this story is when agency is restored to our protagonist, right? When the pirate gets to rejoin her crew and go back out into the world and live the life that she ostensibly wants. And one of the heartbreaking moments is that she chooses that. She chooses to do that instead of staying with the lighthouse keeper, instead of staying with Audie. She goes out into the world and reclaims her agency. And it's a terrible choice and it doesn't work. And she suffers for it and Audie suffers for it. And then people can't pass through this area, so they're suffering for it too. And it's such an interesting moment, again, where C.L. Clarke is so good at this thing where I understand it's, oh, of course she chose that. How could I have expected her to choose differently? But it's still so disappointing and heartbreaking that she does.
And this is a thing that's really great with character stories, is that often a character will fall back into their old wants and goals, their old patterns. It's something we see with people too, that there's a pattern that has served you, that it was comfortable. And if a character is stressed or pressured, they don't re-examine whether or not that's still going to serve them. And if Sego had paused to examine it, like had really taken the time to say, wait, is this what I still want? Then may have made a different choice, but confronted with, oh, this is familiar, goes with the familiar, goes with the old pattern and leaves.
In many story forms, we see what we've called in Writing Excuses episodes, we've used the term armbar, where a term that comes to us from hand-to-hand combat, you put someone in an armbar and you are now compelling them to move in a certain direction. You're restricting their agency. And we talk about arm bars as moments in the first act of a three-act format where the protagonist now has to choose to protag. Mm-hmm. The flip side of that is what we see in this story. There is no arm bar. Mm-hmm. She makes what we would argue is the wrong choice and then looks at the consequences of that choice and examines her life, and because of the breadth of agency she still retains, is able to make the choice that answers the question about where the light went.
Mm-hmm. And I love how resistant these are to traditional ideas of the hero's journey, right? The resisting, refusing the call to adventure is the right choice in all three stories. All three stories are about choosing domesticity, choosing love, choosing care, over choosing heroism and violence and participating in the systems that are oppressing people. And I think that's so beautiful, the way the author contrasts the agency and the choice in that way.
Yeah, it makes me think about, what is this a fantasy of? So a lot of times I think of big hero's journey as being the power fantasy. I have the fantasy to change the world. Like, you know, mm-hmm. I can do that in this book. And to me, this is a fantasy of vulnerability and it's a fantasy of connection. And I think that in some ways it is almost scarier, because that's the thing that we can relate to, or at least I can more in my individual life. The choice to let someone in, the choice to do the thing where you are vulnerable to another person is more my life experience and the ability to change the entire nature of reality. And I think that knowing what your story is a fantasy of, and that there are many different things that it can be. It can be a story of like big stakes and big changes, or big stakes and small changes, but the stakes are no less large for that difference.
Yeah. And it's so fragile, right? Audie needs medication. You know, there's such a strong metaphor here for chronic illness. They're at threat from the state. There's all of these things where Seago is making these choices to that are so counter to going off on adventure in the ways portrayed here. Is it so much scarier than going into the world and raiding whatever she's doing on this ship that Audie thinks of as being a pirate, right?
And the other thing also, you know, with Audie and Seago is that Audie also has a full character story. Yeah. Also is, you know, even though her sections are much shorter, they're in third person, she is making choices in every single one of those. So there's a acronym that I've used in previous seasons called DREAM, which is denial, resistance, exploration, acceptance, and manifestation. And this happens for Audie. When we first start in that first section, she is very much like, I do this alone and I can do this alone. And she's in denial that she needs help. She's in denial that this is something that is more than one person. She had a family. She's doing it alone. She's in denial. Then when the stranger comes, when Seago comes, she goes into resistance that she's still alone, or she still believes that she can do the job alone, but she doesn't object to having company. So when we are in resistance, she is not upset at the prospect of company when the wind blows in. And that's that she's still in resistance, but she's starting to let the idea of someone else exist. Then we get to exploration, where we try out the idea of what would it be like if someone else knew. And that's when that exploration is as she's letting Seago help around the property, doing the different chores. It's like, oh, this does make it easier. And then we get to acceptance.
There's such a moment here that I really love. And it's when Seago has stepped away to go get the medicine from town. And we know that she's not going to, I guess we don't know at this point, she's not going to come back, but that's the next moment. The sudden crush of loneliness is too much to bear, but there's also hope and patience. Seago will come back soon. She will come back and Audie will ask her to stay. And that moment of her accepting like, oh no, I do need this person. I'm going to ask her to stay, but she hasn't done it yet. So the choice that Seago's about to make, we know is the wrong one. We know that Seago knows is the wrong one, but Audie never actually asked her to stay.
Yeah. And this is, I think, also one of the things that brings that idea of choice back in. Had Audie made that choice to ask, then the tragedy would not have continued to unfold. And by leaving, Seago has removed that tiny piece of agency from Audie, because now she no longer has the ability to ask. So that's part of what happens there. Mm-hmm. And it's not until Seago returns that we actually get the manifestation where we see what they do with the knowledge that they are working together. And it is the last line of the story. They are light. They are light together. They are light. And that's the manifestation, which is so lovely that I am sitting here as we're podcasting, trying not to actually cry again because of this story. But it's this beautiful little arc that is all about the choices that the character is making and the times that they have agency and when agency is removed from them.
And what that makes me think that I think is fascinating is thinking about the span of time on the page between the letters of DREAM. So here sort of we get the first four in not like rapid pace, but they're coming pretty regularly. And then there's this delay to manifestation, because that's what the story is driving towards. That's what it's about. Are they able to, they realize, I think both of them, even in making the wrong choices, what they are to each other, but are they able to manifest it? And that's the question that the story is answering.
Yeah.
And so thinking about a different story, like that's telling, you know, a different tale might have a big gap before, you know, acceptance, or a big gap before, you know, any of the other letters in DREAM. And so it just makes me think, where can you put those gaps in your story And where have you put them? Maybe not even thinking about it. And what does that tell you about the kind of story that you're trying to tell?
Yeah, each of them have a try-fail cycle where the character is trying to hold on to their character, to their self-identity. And when they fail to do that, that's the catalyst that moves them to the next level. But sometimes a character will get stuck. Like, they will just be doing resistance over and over again. Those are the character stories that feel very flat, or the ones where we jump straight from dream to manifestation without the character demonstrating change through the choices that they're mm-hmm. making.
All right, with that, I'll take you to the homework, which is to write a scene in which your character has very little agency for whatever reason, but still must make a choice. And do your best to make that choice feel exciting, feel high stakes, feel real for the reader.
This has been Writing Excuses. You're out of excuses. Now go write.
Are you struggling to find time and energy for creative work or writing? Sandra Taylor has a new book that might help. Structuring Life to Support Creativity is a resource book for creative people who want to make more space in the life they have for the creative work they want to do. This book is drawn from 30 years' experience in juggling creative work along with everything else life throws at us. Inside the book, you can find such topics as managing your mental load, arranging your physical space, how to come back to your creative work after life goes sideways, the problem of motivation, and more. The whole book is written with a focus on adapting for how your brain works instead of trying to change you to fit expectations. The book is not prescriptive and instead provides concepts and tools so you can find the ones that work for you. This makes the book autism, ADHD, and neurodivergent friendly. Pre-order your copy today at sandrataylor.com. Just make sure that Taylor has an ER in the Taylor.
Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. For this episode, your hosts were Mary Robinette Kowal, Dongwon Song, Aaron Roberts, and Howard Taylor. This episode was engineered by Marshall Carr Jr., mastered by Alex Jackson, and produced by Emma Reynolds. For more information, visit writingexcuses.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.